entire reason that we have come here to Williamsburg is now upon us. Our whole combined Allied armies are now complete, and we will begin this evening our march to Yorktown, where I have no doubt that by the blessings of God, that we will prove victorious. When you leave here, you are to instruct your men that they are to drop their tents, pack their packs, and prepare to leave this place. By tomorrow, we will begin our siege. The Continental Line, you and your command, we will make way by the halfway house road, spending the night just outside the halfway house. General Nelson and the Virginia militia will make their way inland, staying by Mr. Warwick's place, again to re-meet in the morning. Our artillery, by the excellent recommendation of General Knox, is being moved by water. It has already begun to be removed from this place and taken to Earl's Ferry along the York, our prior part, along the James, to be brought around the peninsula. Your orders will be made clear, will be written by my secretary, Colonel Fumble, and will be received by you before the end of this day. All that to be mentioned tonight. Therefore, I thought I would make myself available to answer this question, whatever they might be, with the exception, of course, of private. Have any new questions or concerns we might address before we begin our march? Siege or the march to Yorktown? Well, sir, now the question is, how long will it take us to get to Yorktown? And I am aware that most of you, as New Englandmen, are not familiar with the vicinity, but it is no more, sir, than 13 miles from here. We could be there tonight, but that's not the intention. As I mentioned, we are stopping on the way. That way our men will be fit when we first arrive at Yorktown. Because I can't imagine, or cannot fail to imagine, sir, that matters will grow hot once we arrive in Brooklyn. Lord Cornwallis will know we're on our way. And he will not simply sit by and allow us to throw up works unmolested. The question is, who will protect the city of Williamsburg? Besides the fact that the city has its own company of militia, in fact, it's my intention to address them after I leave here at 5 o'clock. But Williamsburg isn't under any threat. The only British in the area are at Yorktown. So the city is at present perfectly safe. It's a little rare. Continental Line, our army. The question is, how many men do I have in my command? I have at present 7,000 men through you in this army. The French bring another 7,000 under the command of General Rochambeau. Also, Admiral Compton Gross has brought an additional 3,000 up from the West Indies. And lastly, General Nelson and the Virginia Militia have another 3,000 men in his command. We have just about 21,000 men. Our enemy have little more than 6,000. I mean, are we engaged in conscription, sir? Are we forcing men into this army against their will? Of course not, sir. We're fighting for independence and liberty. We have been engaged in attempting to take New York since this war begun, or almost as well, since it fell, in 76. So I'm not entirely certain which of those plans you mean. We have attempted over and over again to see some alteration of the circumstances in New York. What specifically do you mean by your question? Now I understand. The question is, am I disappointed that the French could not be convinced to bring their fleet to New York? I wish that matters may have been different. However, the circumstance that faces us here in Yorktown is entirely different. We are in an unusual circumstance. guaranteed of success in New York, even with a French fleet. We are certainly guaranteed of success here with Wolf. I've asked, is there any possibility that Cornwallis might remove himself? Well, if he had intended to cross the river, if that's what you mean, by inlet, if you mean Boswell Point, across the river, he shouldn't have sunk his own vessels, which would have made that an easier choice for him. York River cannot be built. He needs boats to cross it. Cornwallis had a small flotilla at his command at that place, but all but two of those vessels have been scuttled. In fact, the guns from them, to the best of our intelligence, have been removed to help bolster his own works. Somebody had said something about guns. We have a strong advantage over our enemy regarding artillery, which is one of the reasons he has needed to disarm his own vessels. Furthermore, Nelson's militia, a good portion of them, and our light horse are already at Gloucester Point, as are, in fact, the enemy's light horse. As to preventing them from leaving prematurely Yorktown, our light infantry are already there, keeping them in that place. As to the number of guns, I didn't see who asked that question, but somebody asked earlier. We stand at a great advantage, not only because of superiority in arms, but we have a large number of siege weapons. The enemy has none. The French have brought with them several artillery pieces, siege weapons, howitzers, and mortars, specifically designed with the intention of working down an enemy's defensive works. The enemy have nothing more than battalion guns, those field pieces that support the infantry, six, in some cases 12 pounders. The French have brought with them 24 pounders. And as I mentioned, mortars, which bomb the shell, explosive shells, not the over. Not only do we have the advantage of siege weapons, but Rochambeau himself is a veteran of 24 similar sieges in Europe, which is a great advantage. It will be, as I mentioned, siege, sir. We will besiege the enemy. What that means is we will march to the city, as I mentioned earlier. When we arrive, we will no doubt need some fire from the enemy's pickets. We will push them back. They will return to their outer works. As night falls, we will throw up our own defensive works in parallel lines opposite the enemy's. By the cover of night, we will endeavor to move those lines closer and closer to the enemy. And if the opportunity arises, we will endeavor to take the enemy's works and turn them against themselves. But even if we fail in that, if a besieged army cannot be resupplied or resupported or escape, or Cornwallis is in such a position at present that none of those options are available to him, then there are only two other options that remain. And that is that the besieger will either be forced to capitulate by starvation and want of supply, or by having his works turned. So we will endeavor to turn his works against him, which will quicken this matter. But even if we are unsuccessful, there can be no doubt that Fort Cornwallis will be forced to capitulate in no more than 2 or 3 months at the most. The question is, have I been concerned at all that the French may not arrive on station in time? I was. I was until we heard that they had arrived. That was, of course, before the victory that they since had. That victory that, in many ways, was given to them by being on station prior to their enemy. They gave them the weather gauge, as they said. We learned of Dr. Gross's safe arrival while we were still in Pennsylvania, before we left to head about. As some of you may recall, this is not my usual nature or custom. I am guided by the writings of Seneca. I endeavor to remain most occasions stoic. Some of you may recall that upon learning that he had won that race, that I danced on the deck of the vessel period, yelled out to the Marquis Lafayette.
Fox's arrogance and low expectations of the Continental Army and militia put him in his position when he's in the dark?
I have no idea how he's found himself in this position, sir. He hasn't shown himself to be particularly arrogant and believed a superiority of his own forces over ours. Not since Princeton, since several years ago. There, perhaps, there would have been some truth to that comment. Lord Cornwallis is without doubt the most able field commander the enemy has. I can't imagine how he's found himself in the position he's now in. You know that the last time he was in Yorktown, just a few months ago, that he sent some 3,000 of his men away to rejoin with General Clinton in New York. I can't imagine that was his own choice, sir. And it may be that he's under such instruction now that there had been some intention to send men away. Maybe that's what the British fleet were doing. I don't know what Admiral Bligh's intention was. Admiral Gray. I have no idea what his intention was at the beginning of this place. No idea why he said his name away. Regarding my stepson, Jack Augustus, and he is. In fact, I'm honored to say that for the first time since this war has begun, my stepson has seen fit to join this cause. As a soldier, as you must be aware, he has joined us in many winter camps alongside his mother. But this is the first time that he has joined as a soldier, and he is presently in my military family. Are there women bearing arms in this army? Occasionally women are found in the army. And if they are found, they are immediately removed. It is unlawful. And of course, our circumstance has never been so desperate that we could rely on forced women to the arms.
How is your wife doing?
Here, I can't hear you, sir.
How is your wife doing?
I'm asked regarding Jackie's mother, my wife, and her circumstances. Again, as I mentioned, she has joined us in every winter camp, as most of you no doubt are aware. But I have been trying for the opportunity for the first time since this war began to visit my wife at home, just a fortnight ago. I have the honor of hosting General Rochambeau for dinner. First time I've been in the house in 6 years. My wife is troubled, as you may imagine, having not only now a husband but a son engaged in this problem. That's the case with any of us. Every time you have a father, a son, a husband, brothers, and engaged in arms in defense of their country. It causes those left behind a great amount of anguish and difficulty. We did not give up the citizen when we took upon ourselves the soldier. We all long for that day that we might return to our homes. But this we cannot do until this nation once again rests in the bosom of peace and liberty. The question is, what do I hope will be the outcome? I think that should be obvious. However, it's more than hopes. As I stated a moment ago, in a matter of a siege, if the enemy cannot resupply, be resupplied, or be supported, then they will eventually be forced to surrender. That's not a hoax. I have the greatest confidence that we are on the verge of capturing an army. We have not done successfully. Saratoga. The question is, what do I believe the British response will be? It's never been my nature to attempt to determine what the future may or may not hold. There have been some who are sanguine enough to believe that this could somehow end this war. I am not amongst that number, sir. And in fact, I think planning on a future before it arrives of such nature is folly. They put us in a difficult and dangerous circumstance of overconfidence. The enemy still hold New York. They still hold Charleston, and they still hold Savannah. We must always be mindful of them. The question is, do we take prisoners of war? We certainly do. They're usually given to civil authority. In fact, when the traitor was here, I spoke of the defense made by the Marquis de Lafayette, but I did not explain what he was defending us from. And originally that was the traitor, Arnold. He made attack into Virginia, nearly captured the legislature of this state, and nearly captured its former governor, Mr. Jefferson. But perhaps more dangerous to our cause is they very nearly liberated the very army I just mentioned a moment ago. General Burgoyne's command taken at Saratoga, which has been held at barracks in Charlottesville. That would have been most unfortunate to me, and would have undone a great deal of the work that was achieved at Saratoga. Yes, sir.
Do you think that British support will come from New York?
No.
The question is, do I believe that the British will support Cornwallis? It's too late, sir. They've lost their opportunity. They should have done so already.
Have you been surprised at the length of the war so far?
The question is, am I surprised at the length of the war so far? I mentioned earlier that it's not my nature to attempt to determine what the future may or may not bring. And that's one of the reasons why, sir. I would have been surprised, perhaps, if I attempted to guess what the future might bring. But there's only one force that can tell us what the future holds. And it is certainly not me. To the best of my knowledge, no mortal has that ability. I have always been willing and expecting to continue in this matter as long as Providence would allow and as long as it was necessary. The question is, how long will this siege take? As I mentioned, they only have enough supplies for 3 months at the most. So it cannot take longer than that. They will starve. However, if we take their words and turn them against them, the matter can be brought much shorter. But that will depend on what opportunities arise. It could be as little as 2 or 3 weeks, and as long as 3 months. I think that Lord Cornwallis is virtuous enough a man that he will not allow his entire command destroyed from a want of supply. So I suspect 3 months is very unlikely. Question is regarding General Knox, the commander of our artillery, the man I mentioned earlier who determined that we should move the guns by water. Our original intention was to move them overland. In fact, we have 666 oxen that we have walked all the way here from New York with that purpose. However, Knox made the argument just earlier today, in truth, that that if we move the guns by the roads, that we may, if there is some difficulty or unexpected difficulty or problem, unforeseen, we may end up bogging these roads down. It will stop the progress not only of the guns, but of the infantry. So it was him that came up with the idea to maybe move by the water, which I think is a salutary idea. And, Colonel Pickering has already made certain that there were available boats and bateaux and scouts for that purpose. We've already begun, in fact, that operation. Colonel Locks has shown himself very able ever since this war begun. It's one of the reasons why I don't place a great deal of creed upon a man's history or upbringing. Why I judge him by his deeds more than anything else. Because General Locks is, of course, a bookseller. How many men did we lose to smallpox? I will change the question. How many men do we lose to smallpox now? Almost none. Because this army is inoculated. The enemy don't take that action. We suffered a great deal of that from that disease when this war began. There are two diseases which are the killer of any army in the field. And both of them are in some means preventable. And that is, of course, the camp fever, which is not entirely preventable, but may be greatly reduced by cleanliness of the camps, and smallpox, which again is not completely preventable, but it is very near to it, and that's by inoculation. And the reason I say very near to it is, of course, in the process of inoculation, you cause the patient to suffer the illness. But in most cases, if the inoculation works as intended, it is less of a dire attack of the illness. More often than not, the man will survive. There are always a few occasions where it fails. This army is an army. I'm glad that Congress was finally convinced of that necessity. Our enemy do not, honestly, the fact that you suffer from that illness. There are residents of this very city who are still suffering from that illness from when Cornwallis was here. In fact, I don't know how many of you remember the old president of the Congress. Former Speaker of the Colony of Virginia, Mr. Payne Randa. He's just recently, well, he's long gone, but he has a young nephew who just recently died of illness. Medical staff? Oh, certainly, certainly. We have a great number of doctors. We have an entire corps of medical staff. It's one of the purposes that I'm here at present, outside the old governor's house. There are a number of buildings like this one that now stand empty here in the city as they no longer serve a purpose. Since our late governor last year, Mr. Jefferson, drove the the Capitol away from this place. So now this building, the old Capitol building on the other end of the street, and some of the buildings at the college stand empty. And it is entirely my intention to put these to work as hospitals. Not just for those who were wounded in the upcoming engagement. We will prove victorious, but it will not be done without the loss of blood. But what is the greater danger to an army? What more soldiers are lost to illness than are lost to either the bayonet or the musket ball. And that's why this woman was asking about smoking. You're not under the misimpression that that was our worst winter, are you? The question is, how difficult was the winter at Valley Forge? And it was a difficult winter, but the worst was last winter. In fact, that makes our present circumstances even more remarkable. Last winter, the winter of 80 and 81, not only did we have a greater difficulty obtaining food than we have ever had since this war began, and not only did we have a greater want of supply, including clothing, to keep the men warm in that winter, and last winter was hard not only for want of food, but for cold. Unnaturally cold. The spirits of the men so in danger last winter that two separate regiments on two separate occasions endeavored to mutiny against the army. Not only that, one of our own generals went traitor in late winter. And one of my close friends and one of my ablest generals, General Nathaniel Greene, was in an incredibly difficult circumstance. Carolinas and appeared to face destruction. Last winter was the darkest we had faced since this war began. It wasn't apparent when we lasted for 4 or 5 days, let alone until victory. In my mind, this makes our present circumstances more remarkable. Here we now stand, on the verge of a great victory. Our debts. Soldiers monetarily paid, thanks in no small support or no small reason to the support of our French allies, who have given us a great amount of money, both in loans and in gifts. In fact, General Rochefeau has given 3,000 livres of his own money to our cause. The spirit of these men now is higher than it has ever been, and only months ago we saw our darkest days. There can be no doubt, in my mind, that there is an angel riding the world. I should probably also mention that, against all possible odds and expectations, General Greene does still fight in the South. Yes.
Which is stronger, the British or the Hessians?
The question is, what is stronger, the British or the Hessians? There are more British than there are their German allies, if that's what you mean. The German allies, however, have a remarkable discipline, perhaps the greater discipline than any army in the world. I think that is an unfortunate circumstance. It's a benefit to an army, but it arises from the fact that they are all subjects of nations that are not free. Second year of this war, in 76, and I know many of you I recognize the faces as having been alongside his army since those days in 76. He saw almost no victories till the end of that year. He repeatedly defeated throughout New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. We saw unfortunate losses, in many cases unexpected. One of the greatest and most grievous will always be Fort Washington. This has not been an easy matter in any way to even engage, sir, in this war for 6 years. 6 long, cruel years. Somebody asked me if I thought the war would continue this long. It's not my habit to determine what the future may or may not bring. But I can assure you that this war would not have lasted as long if our states would be willing to forego what small advantage they have over the other. We would put behind us our local contracted policies, absurd and petty jealousies of one another, and look for the greater good of community. The Congress has only finally, as of only a few months ago, given the authority to raise revenue by taxes, because the Articles of Confederation, written back in 78, were only earlier this year adopted. And immediately the states have worked to reduce the Congress's authority provided by those articles. Those articles do give them the authority to tax, and they have still been denied them by the states. This is no way to fight a war. It's the whole reason we are still engaged in this matter so much, so long into the Kiev, over and over and over again, on campaigns in which we are wanting a supply, a spirit, and a men. If we have had some victories and honors, thanks for those belong not to myself, they do not belong to our men.
Nearly a month. In fact, this may surprise you, but they both
have less seniority than myself. However, Cornwallis is an earl. He is the social superior to General Quentin, and he's personal friends with the Minister of War in England, which means he oft reports over the head of his superior officer. I don't envy that. I don't envy General Clinton that matter at all. And with that in mind, and with the continued evidences of Cornwallis disobeying Clinton's commands, I have no idea why he's in the position he now is in. Where we have an advantage in Greene further south is it keeps the British from taking control of all the south. They hold nothing more in the south except the cities that I mentioned earlier, Savannah and Charleston. They move into the countryside and they will hold an area, and those who support their cause will come out of the bushwork and support them. But once the British are gone, the loyalists want the support and the ability to hold the place. That's Greene's point. The question is, what should be done with loyalists if the war ends soon? Regardless of when the war ends, sir, loyalists who have not aided the enemy, we should extend our hands to them in friendship. Is a difference of opinion a crime in a free society? Is it? Of course it's not. It's the very thing that gives a free society its strength. However, those that have raised up arms, or who have supplied the enemy, that's another matter. Those people have committed a crime. They committed treason.